Sabaz, I said, I don't care how big my classes are. It's
okay. So is that really, we're not having
I think Monday, Erev Shavuos, we'll just, we'll hold.
Take a break.
Okay, let's... Okay. Perek Aleph. What I would like to do today, in the time remaining, is go through the story of Perek Aleph to really get a handle on the story of the birth of Shmuel. It's one of those episodes in Tanakh. It's one of those episodes where you really need to have the whole picture before you can begin to put the pieces together. Right? So we're going to start it from the beginning and go through it. There'll be a lot of questions. We're not going to resolve those questions today. Unfortunately, I'm not sure how many weeks we're going to have to resolve them, so we'll figure out. We may have to kind of... But we'll take it week by week. So let's start from the beginning. First couple of psukim we have looked at, we're just going to review them briefly, and then move on through the rest of the parak. Vahi ish echad min ha-ramatayim tzofim mehar Ephraim. From Ramatayim Tzofim, we talked about the name of the place. Ramah is a hill. Ramatayim.
Two hills,
double hill, right? Tzofim. Har HaTzofim, right? Har HaTzofim, to look out, right? Har HaTzofim, so some kind of mountain hill in Har Ephraim, which is, of course, appropriate for Har Ephraim. Ushmo Elkanah ben Yerucham ben Elihu ben Tochu ben Tzuf Ephrati. We talked about Elkanah's lineage, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Levi from Har Ephraim. Velo shtei nashim, shem achat Chana, v'shem hashenit Pnina. Two wives. First one's name is Chana, second one is Pnina. Okay, remind me this. If we have time permitting, there's an interesting textual observation on this pasuk, but I don't want to distract us, so remind me later if we have time. Vahi lifnina yiladim, ulechana ein yiladim. Pnina had children. Chana did not. Not an unfamiliar scenario. Right? Two wives, one with children, one without. It's reminiscent of all kinds of stories in Chumash. Most prominent amongst them,
Rachel
and Leah. Correct. The Leah Rachel story certainly pops to mind first. Not uncommon. Also, it would be the same scenario with, for example, Sarah and Hagar, in the sense that one was taken because the second wife was taken because the first had no children. In this case, he just happened to have two wives, and
which one was first?
Doesn't tell us.
Chazal.
No, I mean it's quite possible that Chana was his first wife, didn't have children, so he married Penina. She had children, because that's ultimately how often these scenarios work out in the time of Tanakh. They didn't go out intentionally, necessarily, to have multiple wives. That was a different culture. But they did want to have children, and so that was not an uncommon story, especially if one was barren, they would take a second wife. But in this case, in the Yaakov's context, two wives for a different reason altogether. Okay. Pasuk Gimel, we also looked at it in depth. Va'alah ha'ishahu mi'iro mi'amim yamima lihishtachavot v'lizbach la'ashem tzvakot b'shilo. V'sham shnei b'nei Eli chofni u'finchas kohanim la'ashem. Every year he would go up to bring sacrifices. There, Eliu Finchas. There, Chofni Finchas, the sons of Eli. I showed you the Malbim, who says that the reference to Chofni Finchas is an explanation as to why it was such a chiddush that Eli had to go up to the Mishkan. Everybody else was neglecting the Mishkan. Fill in all the stories, Sefer Shoftim, Pilash Megiva, etc. Primarily because of the presence of Chofni Pinchas. Chofni Pinchas is corruption hovers over the as a shadow over the Mishkan and over this story. They are introduced to us right at the beginning, although at this point we don't necessarily know who and what they are, but we do in Perek Bet. Very quickly we learn Perek Bet Pasuk Yud Bet. V'nei Eli b'nei Bliya'a lo yadu et Hashem. These B'nei Eli, they were B'nei Bliya'al, worthless, corrupt people who did not fear God. What that means, we'll come back to. Pretty harsh indictment for Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash. Here's where the story really begins. Pasuk Dalet, Vahi Hayom, Vayizbach Elkana. Venatan lifnina ishto, ulechol banea uvnoteha manot. Ulechana yiten mena achat apayim, ki et chana ahev, vashem sagar rachma. Vayi hayom, Pasuk Dalet, Vayi hayom is kind of a, it was one day, but it's really a reference to what would occur on an ongoing basis. In other words, every time they would come to the Beit HaMikdash, this is what it would look like. Elkanah would bring his sacrifices. He would give Penina her from the korban. He would give a portion to each of his household, of his family. Penina would get, and her children, and her daughters, sons and daughters. And then Chana, what's he going to do with Chana? He can give her portion, but how does he, that there's no children?
He gives her a double portion.
Mana achat apayim. As a kind of way of some kind of compensation for the fact that she doesn't have the chalukah to be able to divide up amongst her children. And to recognize, ki et chana ahev Hashem sagar achma. He loved her, and God closed her womb with means, which is a reference to, of course, or parallel to a similar scenario by Rachel and Leah. Well, Yaakov loved Rachel, and God closed her womb. In Yaakov's case, he did so in order to shift attention to Leah, because Leah was the unwanted wife. In this case, we don't have any indication that Penina was second class or unwanted or less desirable to Elkanah. We don't know the context in which they were married, but there is an element of Hashem Sagar Rachma, recognizing that her barrenness was also in some way intentional by decree, and Elkanah loved her and sought ways to express to her, and I guess there's a psychology here as well, right? Because she was barren, there's a tendency, not an unnatural tendency, for two women in competition with each other, one as in children, one or the other, for the one who doesn't have children to sort of feel a sense of inferiority. And so there's a sense of Hashem, of Kiyat Chanaev, to want to show that he loved her, and he loved her no less, or considered her no less, because she did not have, or she did not bear him children in that context. So that's part of this whole dynamic, is the relationship between Elkanah, Chana, and Penina.
Why would a double portion of food? I mean,
why don't you just make her have children?
I don't mean.
Well, what do you mean make her have children? How do you make somebody have children? This is, we're talking biblical time periods, or I know fertility tests, right?
No, I'm saying
right. Whatever, she did not have children, and we wanted Hashem. Okay, that's part of the life tests to which we don't have answers. And Elkanah was in some way trying to help her understand that he didn't consider her no less. So give her an extra portion, give her something to compensate in some way. Clearly it's not this is instead of a child type of thing, but there is an element of favoritism or showing an element of love to her, or some kind of an extra gift, if you will. You know, in today's context, so put it into modern terms, he would buy her extra jewelry, or he would buy her extra clothes, or buy her special clothes, because he wanted to show that he didn't consider her any less.
To me, this symbolizes how important food was at the time. That's the only way to look at it.
Well, it's also, you're talking about the Beit HaMikdash, so it's a korban, and there are all kinds of connotations to it. But if you were putting it into modern terms, I don't think it would be too far afield to talk about showering her with gifts of all whatever was appropriate, given the fact that she that he wanted to show that he loved her.
If the guy, you know, I could see it. You give him more steak. That's like, okay.
Right, but for not a woman, like, yeah,
she's not eating it anyway. So she's not eating it anyway. So we'll see.
Correct. But he told her that he loved her. He told her how important she was to him.
I'm sure he did.
Well, I thought it says it somewhere in here.
Well, later he'll say something else, but we'll get to that. I'm sure she did. I'm sure he did. But, you know, actions speak louder than words sometimes, and you need to show that a little bit. And but in all cases, in order to understand the next pasuk, we need to understand the dynamic of Chana and Penina. The word in the biblical arena, polygamy is permissible. Not encouraged, but permissible. What do you refer to if you have a wife, you have two wives? What is the term used to describe the relationship between the two wives?
Jealousy.
Right, well, almost. Right? It's not a sister-in-law. Right? It's not a sister-in-law. Fiesta is a verb. Fiesta is a verb. Right? What's the name of a relationship? In other words, how do you define if you have a father-in-law, mother-in-law, brother-in-law? Okay, you have two wives. What is the name of the relationship between the two wives? So in Tanakh, which is a name, there is a name for it, and it's a name that is perpetuated in the language of the Mishnah and the Gemara. And the word is Tzara.
So I said Tzara.
Well, you can understand
from,
that.
From Tzar. Right.
That's terrible. Not Tzar, but Tzara. Tzar is pain. Tzara is trouble.
Trouble, right, yeah, but it comes from the same
competition.
One has an I and one doesn't.
Correct. Oh, okay. They're two different words. I one is tzara is competition. So the two wives are competing with each other in this context, right? And they are tzara zulazu. Right? They're each other's tzara. So interesting. That's observation by itself. The name for competing wives. But anytime you have, and there's an entire all of Masechet Yevamot, which deals with the case of a levirate marriage where a husband dies, and all the complicated relationships, because you have multiple wives of a very dynamic, the word there appears throughout the Mishnah is tzara. And
so does it have a negative?
I think so. I think there is an assumption that it was a pejorative description of a relationship because, generally speaking, there are very rare instances where the relationship between the tzarot was a positive one.
Rivals.
None that I'm that's what the word means. The word means rival. I don't know if there are any in Tanakh. There are a lot of instances of tzarot. There are a lot of instances of competing wives or rival wives. I don't know that there are any that have a warm, fuzzy, dynamic relationship between them. Right. So here, in this case, you have Chana and Penina. V'chi asata tzarata gam ka'as ba'avur har ima. It's a very complex grammar, but her tzara would anger her. Provoke her to anger. She asata gam kaas. She would provoke her to anger.
Here it doesn't have an ayin in it.
It doesn't have an ayin in it. Tsa'ar. Tsa'ar is an ayin in it. Tzadik ayin resh is tsa'ar. This is tsara. It's two different words.
Like suffering. This is
right.
Oh, okay.
Competition.
Right.
Cause trouble.
Ki sagar Hashem ba'adrachma. So here's the picture. She is barren, and of course, in the arena in which you understand that nothing happens by accident and everything is by divine decree, so she's barren for many years, and the assumption is that she's barren by divine decree. And here's Chana, with many children. We will see, the Medrash says she had 10 children. And Penina and Chana has none. And poor Elkanah is torn between these two rival women who are...
Competing.
And that's where we're at. And this would go on every year. He would give her food. He would give her a double portion. He would express his love for her. She would be angry and upset. And it was exacerbated at the moment they came to the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash became the center point of the conflict.
Well, because the portion.
Because every time they came to the Beit HaMikdash, and there was this big korban, and he would give out portions to all the children, and it was a big thing, right? That's how you come to the Aliyah LeRegel. This is your korban of Aliyah LeRegel. And all her children got portions, and she never gets mana achata. וכן יעשה שנה בשנה מדי על אותו בבית השם. Every time they came to the Beit Hashem, כן תח איסנה, פנינה would provoke her again. Ah, yeah, you get one little tiny double portion. Look what I get. I get 10 children's worth of the corn. ותבכה ולא תאכל. She would cry, she wouldn't eat, she wouldn't even take the portion that she was. And finally, at some point or another, Elkanah is frustrated with this relationship and this dynamic of what's going on in the Beit HaMikdash, and he loses control a little bit, and he says to her, "Vayomar la Elkanah Isha," her husband, Elkanah, "Chana, lama tivki, v'lama lo tochli, v'lama yira levavech? Why are you crying? Why don't you eat? Why are you bitter? Halo anochi tov lach me'asara banim. I not better to you than worth more to you than 10 children?" Which is, by the way, the source from the Medrash that says that Dina had 10 children. Which is a really careless, insensitive, and stupid thing to say. But, here in the midst of this emotional turmoil, you're sitting there in the Beit HaMikdash every year. Pnina is having her feast with her children. Chana is depressed. She's crying. In the middle of the avodah of the Beit HaMikdash, you bring out this korban and you give her a double portion. She breaks into tears. How much of this? You know, this is going on. This is going on every year. And so he at some point or another he says, "Enough! You know, eat. What are you crying for? You know, you have count your blessings. I'm good to you. I love you. I care for you. I take care. Okay, so count your blessings. What are you? Not everybody has children." She at that point completely loses it. Vatakom Chana, acharei ochla b'shilo. After she, whatever, I guess she ate something because Elkanah insisted. So she got up. She drank, she ate her meal, whatever it was. Ve'eli ha-kohen yoshev al ha-kiseh ha-mezuzat he-chal Hashem. What is the significance of this phrase here in the middle of everything? I'm not sure. But Eli ha-kohen is sitting on his throne, al ha-kiseh, opposite the entrance to the he-chal, the mezuzah. So evidently, opposite the Beit HaMikdash's entrance, where the Mishkan, there's a throne for the Kohen Gadol, and Eli is sitting on his throne, all like you say. V'hi marat nafesh. So here's Eli sitting on his throne, and here's Chana, bitter, pained. Vatitpalel al Hashem uvachot tivke. She comes in to pray and to cry. And you know, of course, all the halachot of tefillah that we learn from Chana's tefillah. We'll see that in Medrash a little bit later. Vatidor neder. She takes an oath. Vatomar Hashem tzvakot. Im ra'ot ir'e ba'oni amatecha. If you will but see the, what's the oni amatecha?
Punishment or impoverishment?
No, impoverishment. It doesn't come from the word ani, it comes from the word oni, which means affliction. Right. If you will but see the affliction, the pain of your maidservant, uzchartani, which is why, by the way, this word, this key word, uzchartani, remember me, judge me favorably, remember me, and is the reason this perek is read as the Haftorah of this one word makes this Haftorah the Haftorah of. When do we read the story of the birth of Shmuel? The story of Chana is Haftorah. Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
circumcision the same day as the Akedah? No, the first day. I mean the birthday.
First day Rosh Hashanah. First day Rosh Hashanah. Hashem pakarat Chana, Hashem pakarat Sarah. We read the story of the birth of Shmuel, but primarily because of the word Uzchartani, because it's Yom HaZikaron. Zchartani v'lo tishkachat amatecha, remember me, don't forget me, don't abandon me. V'natatal amatcha zera anashim. And give me, your maidservant, seed, children. If you will but do this for me, unitativ l'Hashem koyimei chayav. I will give him to God all the days of his life. Now, that statement by itself, which is the source of all the issues, is a remarkable comment because...
To me, it's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. It's also irrational.
Yeah.
What is she saying?
She's going to give him up.
Right. So on the face of it, you could say maybe all she means is... Right? I could give him up. What does it mean? In a vacuum, what would you understand this to mean?
Nazir.
Well, I haven't gotten to the second half of the phrase. The second half of the verse.
Right.
The second half of it is Umaralo Yaleo Shah, make him a Nazir. Make him a Nazir, I won't take a razor to his head. That half of it I'm going to leave out for now. That's a whole different conversation. But what does it mean? Unitativ LaHashem Koyimei Chayav. I will give him to God all the days of his life. On the face of it, on the. Before we get to the rest of the story, we know what happens next, but before, as if we didn't know what happens next, what does the phrase mean on a simple explanation?
That's not what
you would understand it to mean normally.
Yeah.
Dedicate his life, raise him to God, to serve God, to be loyal to God. I will make him to be a devoted servant to God. There are many interpretations, very legitimate and very understandable interpretations that we could give to the phrase Nitativ LaHashem Koyimei Chayav. I will dedicate his life to God. I will raise him and educate him to be a loyal servant to God, a nazir to God. However you want to define it, doesn't necessarily mean what she ends up doing and understanding it to mean, which is to literally give him up to God. Right? That's an astounding interpretation. For two reasons. Number one, we have no precedent for that. And number two, what did she achieve? Right? She has a child so that she could just prove to Pnina that she can do it too and then give him away? What do you gain from that? But it's clear from the continuation of the story that that's precisely what she had in mind. What she had in mind was to literally bring him back to the Beit HaMikdash at the age of two, hand him over to Eli, and have visiting rights every year once she came to the Beit HaMikdash, and that would be it.
That's right.
And we're going to see that we're going to see in a few minutes that relationship is embedded in his name. It's embedded in his name, so it's a very odd relationship. Why would she ask for a child just to be able to give him up?
And I thought the whole idea of a Nazirut is that we're supposed to be limited. I mean, I know you've got the thing of...
There's a machlokin in the Gemara whether a Nazirut is a preferred state of being or a non-preferred state of being. We have a tendency to quote the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, who says that it's a non-preferred state of being. Rashi seems to quote that as well. But most of the Mefarshim, and actually the halachic conclusion, is not that way.
Oh. It's
an interesting oddity as to why we refer back to this opinion, which ends up being a minority opinion. Every time it's quoted in the Gemara, it's always quoted as the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. But the majority opinion holds that it's a wonderful state to aspire to. But in this case, Shimshon we know about, and we'll talk about Shmuel as well.
Why
so that's the tefillah.
It's a wonderful state to aspire to.
We'll talk about it. We talked about it a little bit back in Shimshon. Yeah. And there's an element of sanctity, and the equivalent of a Kohen Gadol, equal to in state and Kedusha to a Kohen Gadol, is certainly something to be, you know. All right, Pasuk Yud Bet. So that's her tefillah. Her tefillah is two sentences. She takes an oath, It's actually one sentence. Vatidon neder. She takes an oath, and she says, "If you will see my affliction, if you will hear my cry, I would like need a child so that I can give him back to you and make him a nazir." She's pouring out her heart for this child. She's pouring out her heart before God in prayer. Interesting phrase. What does Eli Shomer et Piha mean?
He's
watching her pray, right? He's watching her mouth. He's watching her as she's praying and observing that V'chanai medaberet aliba rak svateha naot v'kola lo yishamer. Observing that she is praying in a manner which is perhaps uncharacteristic at the time, meaning
she's moving her lips.
She's not saying anything. So he doesn't know what she's saying. She doesn't know what she's praying for. That's important because you're going to see he's going to offer her a blessing over this prayer without knowing what this prayer is. And he sees this odd behavior, somebody talking to themselves. He thought she was drunk. So, of course, there's a famous Vort of Vonnegon that Eli saw the letters of the power of the Kohen Gadol, the power of the Kohen was to read the Urim V'Tumim, but the Urim V'Tumim didn't speak in clear language, it spoke in letters. It would light up certain letters of the names that were embedded on the stones. So the letters Kaf Shin Resh He lit up on the, or Shin Kaf Resh He lit up on the Urim V'Tumim. He read them as Shikara, so the Gaon says, rearrange them and they end up reading Ksheira. Right? So that's the Vort of the Vonnegon. But in all cases, there's something about her that strikes Eli as inadequate, odd, strange. Vayomer elea Eli, ad matay tishtakarin, hasiri et yenech me'alayach. He immediately thinks she's drunk. He says to her, you're not allowed to daven when you're drunk. You're not allowed to pray when you're drunk. What are you doing? Go sober up and come back. Natan chana v'tomer, lo adoni, ishak shat ruach anochi. My master, you've got it wrong. I am not drunk. I am bitter, sorrowful. Yahim v'shechal lo shatiti. So why am I davening v'shpochat nafshi lifnei Hashem? Poured out my heart before God. Al titen et amatcha lifnei bat bliyal. Don't give your maidservant before the daughter, a worthless daughter. Meaning, don't make me out to be some worthless person. Worthless daughter who comes in here drunk and davens drunk. Kimirov sichi v'chaasidi parti adhena. I have spoken out of what's motivating her prayer?
Her heart.
Rov sichi v'chaasi. She's got much on her mind, right? Much to say. Rov sichi, siach, and anger. And she's angry. Does she have the right to be angry? I think so, and she has every right to be angry. Vayan Eli vayomer lechi l'shalom. Eli says to her, "Oh, if that's the case, go in peace." Velokei Yisrael yitenet shelatech asher sha'alt me'imo. May God give you. Now it's interesting. Look at the way things are written. These are very important phrases. Shelatech asher sha'alt.
The question which you.
That which you ask, but shelatech is written. There's a letter missing.
Aleph.
The aleph is missing. Right? It should be shelatech.
Asher shal.
This is shelatech. It means the same thing. But it's there's this. There's these words, letters. I didn't bring my chart over. There's these words that keep coming up in the conversation between Eli and Chana that all follow the same pattern. She'ela, she'la. We're going to get to all of these words momentarily. She'latech asher sha'alt. Now, does he know what she asked for?
No.
So it's interesting.
Well, she might have a hint since she's told him what she was crying about.
She
did.
She didn't tell him
she's crying about.
She said she was angry, but she didn't say the reason why.
Did she say why?
If they come every year, don't you think this guy knows one has kids and one doesn't?
Maybe.
Otherwise, what the heck is he watching?
Could be.
The part that always bothers me is that why does she have to be loud? Why her prayer is so silent, and he finds that to be
so odd.
Yeah, I mean,
Grant, good question. Good question. By the time we're done, we're going to turn the story upside down, because what we're eventually going to find is that I don't think her prayer. I don't think the novelty of her prayer was that it was silent. What I think the novelty of her prayer was that it, because it was silent, he didn't know what she was praying about. Because there's something in... Maybe. But there's something embedded in her prayer that we're not seeing yet because we don't have the whole story. But and that's one of the reasons why I want to go through the whole story and then go backwards. But in all cases, he doesn't see her move. Most people are praying out loud, and she's not, so that's odd. And she sees her move her lips, so he thinks she's talking to herself.
And
therefore, the image that gets conjured up, remember, if you've never seen anybody daven, think about it in these terms. Remember, davening is not a choreographed art at this point in time. Tefillah in the Beit HaMikdash comes through
Korban.
So, daven outside of the Beit HaMikdash, but you come to the Beit HaMikdash, you come to the Mishkan, you bring a korban. That's how you make a request. So there's a procedure involved. There's a korban, there's vidui, there's choreograph on terms of what's going on at the Mizbeach. To come into the Heichal and to speak without a korban and to just move your lips as if you're speaking to God, that's what we consider standard, but for Chana that was a revolution, right? You didn't do that. You didn't just come in and speak without a korban.
So how do we know what females did? Do we have some record of what females...
Forget females. I don't think males did that either. Right? This is not a male-female issue. This is the fact that that's not procedure.
It was unusual.
Okay, it's unusual. So here's somebody standing there speaking, moving their lips, not saying anything. And if you go walk down the street and you see somebody standing there going like this, moving, talking to themselves, and today you think they're talking on a Bluetooth phone.
Right.
Right? But there are no Bluetooth phones. You'd think that they're a little bit...
crazy.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I went to New York. Everybody in was talking to themselves. They're like, you can tell I'm not from me.
Right. So it's not... I don't think it's unreasonable for him to have made that assumption. And she corrects him. And at that point, for whatever reason, without telling him what the tefillah was about, his response was in a 180-degree turnaround. Whatever you asked for, God should give it to you. Yiten Hashem et shelatech asher sha'alt me'imo. He has no idea what he's just blessed her with. Vatomer, timtza shivchatecha chen be'enecha, let your maidservant find favor in your eyes. Vaterech, ha'isha ledarka, she went home, and she's much happier now. Why is she much happier? Number one, and number two,
he said he's gonna
the Kohen Gadol just offered. It's like, you know, like the Rebbe gives you a bracha. The Kohen Gadol just made you a promise. Vatelach haisha ledarka, vatochal ufaneh lohayu laod. She was eating. She was smiling. She was happy. She was no longer depressed. Veshkimu baboker. The morning they got up, they went home, got back to the house in Ramah. Va'yeda Elkanah et Chana ishto, va'yizkareh Hashem. There's a Gemara that says that there are three partners in the creation of man, in the context of Kibbud Av V'Em, right? Father, mother, and God. This pasuk, I think, is one of the most powerful indicators to that idea. Vayeda el kanat chana ishto, father, mother, vayizkareh Hashem, and God remembered her, judged her favorably. There's that convergence of all three in the roles of the birth of a child.
Are we going to talk about this idea of Hashem used for? And that we have, like, there's six mitzvot related to memory. Are there six or seven?
Yeah, but when we talk about God remembering, you have to...
It's not
the
like,
same. The concept of zikaron as it applies to God, it's really a Rosh Hashanah theme, is much more in line with the concept of judgment. than it is with memory. Man has to evoke memory. God doesn't have to evoke memory, right? So when we talk about God remembering, that's what all of Rosh Hashanah is about. It's Yom Hadin, and therefore it's Yom HaZikaron. Yom HaZikaron is not a concept of remembering that which is forgetting.
Look at all the stories where it says Hashem Yizkor at Noah.
Right, it's all under anytime Zikaron.
It's not just like, oh, he remembers, something happens.
Correct, because it's judgment. That's what I'm explaining, that the word Zikaron as it applies to God is a function of judgment. When God remembers, it means God's judging. So judgment is always at a moment of truth, a moment of decision. And therefore, something has to happen. There has to be a consequence to that memory. That's what Yom HaDin is about. Whereas man's memory, when we talk about Zikaron as a mitzvah, remember this, remember that, Zuchor et asher salchem Miriam, Zuchor et asher salchem Amalek, right, that's an action. We have to remember.
Something also has to happen.
Yes and no.
Zuchor Yom HaShabbat.
Right, but that's a separate issue. But that's separate from the concept of zechira as it applies to God. Zechira as it applies to God is a concept of judgment, and
so
judgment
there's no
connection. There's no connection.
So this remembrance here, does that mean that it has to be mentioned every time, like with all the other wives that are barren? I mean, does this mean that? I mean, why do we take
such this
particular note? That we're noting it here, so
because this is the story of the birth of Shmuel, Sefer Shmuel. I don't think it was a reflection on other stories per se. We talked about this by there it says Vashem by Sarah it says Vashem pakad et Sarah. It said by Rachel it says Vashem patachat vayiftach Hashem et Rachma. But we talked about this by Shimshon. There are certain stories in Tanakh where they talk about barren women having children. Those stories are unique because they have a certain message in Tanakh. But that's not necessarily because every barren woman has a message. These are moments that are specifically
unique
and have a certain pattern. Okay. Back to Pasuk Chaf. Vayihi l'tkufato yamim, a year later. Vatar chana vatelet ben, vatikra et shmo Shmuel. She has a child. She names him Shmuel. Why Shmuel? Ki me Hashem she'iltiv. Shmuel means, you have to be careful with the phraseology here. What does Shmuel mean?
I asked him about Hashem.
Right, so that's what, right, so you have to be careful, because when we normally think of Shmuel, if I say, well, what does the word Shmuel mean?
Heard God.
Right. But Shema is at the nine.
I know. The spelling's off.
Correct.
The spelling's off here too.
Correct. So you have to reverse the letters because you can't put the mem before the shin. In Hebrew, you can't put mem before a shin. Mish, right? It doesn't work. So it's Shmuel, which is an acronym for Me'ashem She'iltiv. So the mem gets flipped into the middle of the word, but the mem is me Hashem, and she'iltiv is I asked. We're going to see in a moment that that's a double there's a double entendre there. So me Hashem she'iltiv, she asked this from God for this child. Therefore, he's named the Mishuel or me Hashem Shaul, me Hashem she'iltiv, but he's becomes Shmuel. Vayal ha'ish Elkanah v'chol beto lisboch la'Hashem. That's a year later. Elkanah is ready to go up to the Beit HaMikdash a year later to bring his sacrifices. It's Zevach Hayamim Bet Nidro. V'chana lo halata. Chana's not going. Chana's going to sit this one out. Ki amra l'isha ad yigamel hanar v'havi otiv. I have to wait until the child is old enough to be weaned, and then I'll bring him to the Beit HaMikdash, because, of course, she has in her mind that she's going to
leave
him there. So once he's going to leave him there, he has to be weaned. On the other hand, and there she says, V'nirat, V'nei Hashem, V'yashiv Sham Adolam. I'll bring him to the Mikdash. He'll be in the presence of God, and he'll sit there forever. So I can't just bring him now. He's a baby. Elkanah is suspicious. Why is he suspicious?
Because all these years she goes without a kid, now she finally has a kid, she doesn't want to go.
Right. So what does he suspect?
something's up.
That he's she's going to kind of renege on that deal. You know, there was an interesting deal she made with God. You give me a child, I come back to you. Here's the first year, and Elkanah's gone back to the Mikdash, and she's not going. So Elkanah says, "Wait a second, are you second guessing? You'd have to. It's a neder. A husband has to know about his wife's neder because he has to have the authority to annul the neder, right? So we talked about that by Manoah. He didn't do it. And he holds her to that neder.
Right.
He holds her to that neder.
So why didn't he do it?
Because he wanted to hold her to that neder. He agreed with the neder. Vayomer la Elkanah isha, asi atav be'inayich. Fine, if that's where you feel, you want to stay here, do what's good in your eyes. But, shviyat gomlechoto, sit until you wean him. But Ach Yakem Hashem et Dvaro, God kept his half of the bargain. Therefore, you have to keep your half. You want to stay here for another year? Fine. But don't think that I'm going to let you off the hook so easily. This is you have a deal to make. God kept his half. Vateshev Aisha vatenek et bna ad gomla oto. So she did, she remained till she finally weaned him, and then she takes him up to the Mikdash after she's weaned him. Befarim shlosha ve'efa achat kemach ve'nevel yayin. Look what she brings. She brings korbanot galor. Parim, three bullocks. Three oxen. It's a par. Right? It's an ox. It's a gazunt korban. That's a real shtickle flesh, as they say, right? It's a real korban. And an eifa of mincha, of meal offering, and wine. She comes celebrating. Vativyeu bet Hashem Shiloh v'anar na'ar. She comes with a child. V'ishchatu et apar, v'viu et anar elili. They bring, they take the offering, they shechtu, they bring the korban. Everything's good. Then they bring the child to Eli. Vatomer, vi Adoni, chei nafshecha Adoni, my master, please, on your life, takes an oath. Ani ha'isha ha'nitzevet imcha bazeh litvalel al Hashem. Remember me, 2 years ago? I stood here in the Beit HaMikdash. I stood here praying to God. El anar hazeh itpalalti. Here she reveals the secret for the first time. Remember, she didn't tell him what she was praying for. He only had given her the bracha. Now she says, I prayed for this child. Yiten Hashem li et she'elati asher sha'alti me'imo. Follow it through. She'elati asher sha'alti me'imo. My request, which I asked of him. Ve'gam anochi. Hish'iltihu l'Hashem kol yamim asher hayah hu sha'ul l'Hashem. Now, what's the difference between lish'ol and l'hash'il?
Lish'ol is
to request. L'hash'il
is to lend.
It's to lend, correct. A borrower is a sho'el. He asks, and he therefore borrows. L'hashil is to lend. All these times we were translating the word lish'ol as to request. Correct?
Yes.
That's not what she meant. She never said to she never requested a child. She only wanted to borrow a child. And lend him back to God. That's the amazing part of it. He's called Shmuel ki me'ashem she'iltiv, not that I asked of God for this child. From God did I borrow this child.
That's a big difference.
Correct. And she demonstrates that when she brings the child back to God, she only borrowed him for a year or two till she could wean him. Then she brings him back. Ki me'ashem ve'gam anochi hish'iltihu la'ashem natati la'ashem koyim mechayav. I've given to God all the days of his life. I've lent him back to God. And all the days of his life, who sha'ul la'ashem, he is
loaned
to God. And he will grow up in the Beit HaMikdash.
So I have a question. Does that mean that she felt that she would not, that she herself, does this imply that she herself felt that she would not get this child unless she went over the top to do it this way?
We don't have a clue what it means yet. I said at the beginning of this class that we were going to ask a lot of questions today, but we're not going to get a resolution of them. But it's a mystery because it's an unprecedented concept.
Wean a kid more than 2 years.
Well, I use 2 years as an example. It doesn't say 2 years.
Is so totally different from what he said.
What does it say?
He said at the very end, because he'll be devoted to Hashem. It's the question of being borrowed and lent, and it's very different meaning. It's a total different twist to the whole.
I just work off the words. Nishol and Lahashil is to ask, to borrow, and
no,
to
but
lend.
I'm saying it's totally different.
Correct.
And does that mean that somebody would sit in the Beis Hamikdash, whoever it was, and somebody's praying, and I'm going to grant you, no matter, without knowing what
you're asking for?
Yeah.
I grant you that
there's
it is a mystery.
There's
a lot of questions.
We'll just add that one too.
Add it to the list.
But God created the heaven and the earth, so you can say God owns everything. So,
on a very esoteric level, we talk about our lives being borrowed from God for borrowed time. We live in borrowed time, right? We talk about those concepts. That's not what she's talking about. She's not talking about the esoteric concept that life is borrowed from God.
No,
and life,
she's
right?
Really talking
she's talking about a very concrete,
you know,
I made
a
bargain.
Child, but I'm giving him, he's
back,
not mine, he's
correct.
Yours.
It's only on that condition. She's asking
I
him about
those
conditions.
She was so legalistic about the whole thing. I mean, she
right?
wanted a baby.
That's right. This is
but
it's really remarkable stuff.
As my mom
she's
would say, this sounds a little far.
So we're going to have to put some rationality to all of this, but we shall see. In the meantime, just to follow through the concept, jump for a second, Perek Bet, to Pasuk Yud Chet. Just want to show you the end of this little story, so you see exactly what she meant by giving him back to God. Ushmuel, Perek Bet, Pasuk Yud Chet. Ushmuel Mesheret Et Pnei Hashem. Shmuel is serving God. Na'ar chagur efod bad. He's a young man wearing a efod, a bad clothing of the Kohen, which is a little odd because he's not a Kohen, he's a Levi, but all right. Umi'il katon taselo imo. His mother made him a little cloak. He's a little boy. He's wearing kahuna garments. So his mother made him a cloak. Va'alta lo miyamim yamima. And she would bring in this cloak every year, ba'alota el et isha lizboch et zevach hayamim. Every year, when Elkanah would come up to the mikdash, and she would come, she'd be able to come and see him growing, and bring him a little coat, and bring him next year a little bit of a bigger coat. And she had these visitation moments every year. She would come to the Beit Hamikdash. She would visit him. Uverach Eli, let me finish. One second. Uverach Eli et Elkanah ve'et ishto. Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife. V'amar yasem Hashem lecha zera min ha'isha hazot tachat ha'she'ela asher sha'al la'Hashem. Then he blessed her and said, may God give you other children in lieu of the one whom you lent to God. V'yachulim komo, ki fakad Hashem et Chana. And God did hear this prayer, and God did remember Chana. Vatar vatelet shlosha banim u'shtevanot. And she did have other children. She had three other sons. She had two other daughters. Vayigdal hanah Shmuel im Hashem. But Shmuel is in the Beit HaMikdash growing up with Hashem. So after the story, Chana has more children because Eli blessed her. She should have more children. But in the meantime, this one is in the Beit HaMikdash.
But was she blessed because she gave that first one?
However you want to understand it. But this one's in the Mikdash. She has other children. So vis-a-vis her status as a mother for Pnina, that problem is resolved. Why is that problem resolved?
She
has other children.
But it's weird.
But that problem is not the resolution of that problem is not Shmuel. Shmuel is living in the Beit HaMikdash.
But he's not a Kohen.
Correct. Also a mystery. He's wearing an ephod, he's wearing a me'il,
and he's
not a Kohen.
And he's doing a voda?
I don't know what he's doing, but he's living in the Beit HaMikdash.
He's
growing up in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He's sleeping in the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
But he's a Levi.
Forget the Levi. He's sleeping in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Nobody's allowed into the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
There's another Levi that became a Kohen.
Yeah, there you go. So this.
You can just do what you want.
It's Har Ephraim. It has.
Something about Har Ephraim.
Har Ephraim.
This is really remarkable stuff. Now, just to add another piece to the puzzle. We have 10:30. Is the we have 10 more minutes? Just to add another piece to the puzzle. At the beginning of Perek Bet, we have 10 psukim known as Tfilat Chana. Tfilat Chana is a very beautiful tefillah. It actually is the earliest composition of sections of Hallel, and sections of Hallel are built on this tefillah. But as you read it, in the context of what we have just learned, it's really a tefillah that makes no sense. So, I want to quickly run through it. We don't have time to go through it in depth. I'm just going to skim through it and understand the basic question. Vatitpalel Chana vatomar. Chana offers a prayer. She says the following: Alatz libi ba'Hashem. My heart, alatz libi. My heart is jumping before God. Ramak karni ba'Hashem. My crown is elevated before God. Rechav pi al oivai. My mouth is expanded over my
enemies.
Now, who are her enemies?
Her tzara.
So Rashi says her enemies is Pnina. Oivai al Pnina. Now, first of all, grammatically that's problematic because
it's plural.
It's plural. So the Radak says, oh, no, it must mean Pnina and all of those who angered her when she had been barren. In other words, Pnina had friends. Right.
Other people.
Pnina had friends. They would pick on her. So, Pnina v'chavroteha. Okay. Still strange. Why would she refer to them as her enemies? And we'll see, as the tefillah goes on, this issue becomes only more acute. Ki samachti bishu'atecha. I've rejoiced with your
Salvation,
victory, Yeshua. Ein kadosh kashem ki em biltecha ve'en tzur kelokeinu. There is none holy like you. There is none other than you. Al tarbut zabu gvoha gvoha. Don't speak in haughty, arrogant terms. Elevated speech. Yitze atak mipichem. Don't let arrogance come out of your mouth. Ki al deot Hashem ve'lo nitkenu alilot. God knows all. God is the master of all schemes. Keshet giborim chatim. The bow of the warrior is broken. What's a bow? Bow and arrow. V'nichshalim azuchayel. And those who are girded for war fall. Who's girded for war with a bow and arrow? Who are her enemies that are broken and destroyed? Are we still talking about?
Like
are we still talking about Pnina?
Doesn't sound like her.
Right, that's what Chazal seemed to say. Then we get to the next pasuk, which is really remarkable. Sveim balechem niskar. Those who are satiated. Savea. Those who are satiated with bread, niskar. They get schar. They get reward. Ureevim chadelu. And those who are hungry cease to be. Ad akara yalda shiva, while the barren one has seven, rabat banim umlala, the one who has many children is mournful. On that pasuk, the Gemara says, it's a medrash actually, that for every child Chana bore, Pnina buried two.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
It's like a curse.
Which, if you think about it in context, is really remarkable. That here's this tefillah, and what she ostensibly is saying, so certainly says Chazal, is ad akara yalda shiva'a, she has seven. Why does she have seven? The pasuk only says she has
six.
Five.
Plus
three plus two. Well, leaving Shmuel out for a second, three plus two. So three plus two, Chazal say that for every, that's five.
That's ten children.
Okay, so for every one that she bore, two died from Pnina, except that when she got to the last child, Pnina made a special request of her to daven on her behalf so the last two shouldn't die, and so she davens a special tefillah that the last two of Pnina shouldn't die, so in the end, those two are counted to her credit, so she ends up with seven. That's how Chazal worked the math.
Lord.
It's really remarkable and horrific commentary. If that's the pshat of Tefillat Chana, she's praying, she's celebrating, Alatz Libi Bashem, she's dancing, her heart is beating, she is Ramak Karni, her crown is elevated, she's gloriously happy because she has children, while in the next room,
they're dying.
Pnina is sitting ship. Hashem, and listen to the rest of the Tefillah, Hashem Memit Umechaye. God causes those, some to die and some to be born. Morit Sha'ol Vayal brings him to the, down to the depths and raises up. Hashem Mori Shumashir. Hashem impoverishes and makes wealthy. Mashpil Af Meomim. Af Meomim. Lowers and raises. Mekim Me'afar Dal takes the poor, the impoverished out of the dust and raises them up. Me'ashbod Yarim Evyon takes the destitute out of the dung heap. Lo Shivim Nedivim. To sit him amongst nobles, v'chisei chavod yanchilem, and give him the seat of glory to inherit. Ki l'Hashem ritzuke eretz v'yashet aleihem tevel. God sits on the throne of the entire world. That's the phrase that is the foundation of the first paragraph of Halal. Raglei chasidav yishmor protects the feet of his righteous. U'reshem b'choshech yidamu, and the wicked walk in are silent in darkness. Who is the Chosh, who is the Rishaim, and who are the Chasidim? Again, assuming that this is a tefillah between the Chana of the conflict between Chana and Pnina, it would seem that the who is the Rasha and who is the Chasid?
According to her.
According to the other
right?
Side.
Right? The Pnina. It is not through strength man is victorious. Hashem Yechatu Merivav, God will break his enemies. Alav b'shamayim yareim, cry out against them in the heavens. Hashem yadin afse aretz, God will judge the ends of the earth. V'yiten oz l'malko, he will give strength to his, or he gave strength to his king. V'yarem keren mishicho, and he gave and he elevated the crown of his anointed one. What are we talking about?
This is all about Penina?
That's the mystery, right? On the one hand, Chazal say, okay, so put it back to the context of Penina, and here's what it says. But none of this tefillah seems to have anything to do with Penina.
No.
It's a remarkably odd and somewhat cruel image to suggest that she's talking about the fact that Penina's children are dying as hers are being born, and therefore she's rejoicing over it. It's remarkably incongruous, and on top of that, all of these phrases about Kisei, about Melech, about Mashiach, about Gibor, about Azuchayil, about Keshet, about these are all images of war. These are all images of war. Physical war. Bow and arrow. Enemies' war. So of whom or of what is she referring in this context?
Is this the prayer, the actual prayer?
This is her tefillah of Thanksgiving.
Okay. But is this the actual prayer that she got an okay from and saying you can have whatever you want?
No, this is her Thanksgiving prayer after the child is born.
This is after. But why?
Correct.
But then again, this little paragraph which you skipped and went further on is much harsher than the rest that you read when we talked about the child. You skipped and you went to another psukim.
I skipped Pasuk Yud Aleph to Yud Chet, you mean? That's about Chofni and Pinchas. We haven't gotten to that.
This paragraph that you came back to is much harsher than anything else we've read, and it's in the middle over here.
Right. So we'll have to put it all back together.
Because this doesn't flow with the rest of it.
Well, this is right after Perek Aleph. She brings the child, and then she owes this feeling.
Yeah, but the words...
The next part of it isn't about her.
Yeah, the words are, to me, in the wrong place. The whole paragraph is...
Right. Unless there's a lot going on in this paragraph that we're not seeing.
But this paragraph is out of context.
Correct. So as I said, we have a lot of questions.
What about if we did two Tuesdays?